Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Pastor Mike again. I want to ask you a question, and I want you to be very honest. How many of you guys would say that you occasionally, or maybe even often, have some questions and doubts when it comes to your faith? Can you honestly say there are some things that you just don't understand? And I want to tell you that questions and doubts are okay. Our God is big enough to handle our questions and doubts. Just the other week, I was talking to one of our young people about predestination and free will. Does God know everything that's before it happens? Does God destine people to heaven and hell? Well, where does free will, where does our choice, where does that fit into the mix? This is deep. This is heavy stuff. And it has been debated for centuries by brilliant scholars and theologians that can be found on both sides. So, what do you do with that? I certainly have questions and doubts when I look around this world and I see all the brokenness. Like, where is God when I read about a dad so angry that he kills his wife and children in their sleep? Where is God in sex trafficking? Where is God when kids and adults around the world are dying because they don't have access to clean water? What do you do when you don't have all the answers? Or do you have to have all the answers to have faith and believe? Today we're going to be looking at an event found in John chapter 9 where a man who has been born blind, he encounters Jesus. And when he meets Jesus, the life of this blind man is radically changed in two different ways, two major ways. And in this encounter, I believe it's going to help us see God even when we don't understand or when we don't have all of our answers. And I want you to know right from the start, like, here's the main point. So if you're going to miss everything, don't miss this. Here's the main point, that there is hope, there is redemption, and there is new life found in Jesus and Jesus alone. Let's go ahead and start reading. John chapter 9, starting in verse 1. It says, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man who had been born blind from birth. Okay, so as Jesus and his disciples are traveling, they come upon a man who has been born blind. So think about it. This man had never seen a sunset, never seen a sunrise, never seen a sheep or a goat, never seen a flower. He had never seen the faces of his mom and dad. He's never seen the beauty in God's creation that points to a divine creator. And since this man is born blind, he never had an opportunity to be educated. Never learned a trade, never had a job. This man's life was destined to be a beggar on the street. Nothing more than that. Verse 2, Rabbi, his disciples asked him, why was this man born blind? Was it because of his own sins or his parents' sins? So since this man is basically seen as nothing to the culture, the disciples of Jesus, they didn't see this man as a man in need. They didn't see him as a man who needed help, who needed grace or mercy. But they saw this man as a subject to a theological question. Who sinned that caused this man to be born blind? You see, this question reveals a very legalistic view on life, which was then fostered by the religious establishment of the time. You see, legalism is our attempt to earn God's favor through our own good deeds. So in order to keep God indebted to them, they would do good things. And the more and more good deeds you would do, it would cause God to deserve to give you a blessing. So the other side of the coin is this, that the more bad things you do, it would warrant a curse or a punishment like being born blind. So legalism is not just something that was a problem in the time of Jesus. Right? People still hold on to legalism today. Oh, you have cancer. I'm so sorry. I wonder what you did to deserve that. Oh, your kids are on drugs? I'm so sorry. That's so tough. You must be a bad parent and are being punished for something. It's a good thing I go to church every week, and I give money, and I pray, and I don't cuss, and I don't drink. Therefore, nothing like that will happen to me or my family or my loved ones. Do you see it? Blessings and curses, punishments based on our actions, the things we do or don't do. That's legalism. So the disciples, they see this man born blind, and they conclude that either he had sinned or his parents had done something wrong, sinned, because of this man's blindness. So what is Jesus' reaction then to this question? Well, I want you to know he disagrees with it, and Jesus has no sympathy for legalism. Look at verse 3 now. Jesus is speaking here. He says, "It was not because of his sins or his parents' sins," Jesus answered. "This happened so that the power of God could be seen in him. We must quickly carry out the tasks assigned us by the one who sent us. The night is coming, and then no one can work. But while I'm here in the world, I am the light of the world." So Jesus says that this man's blindness, it has nothing to do with this man's sin. It has nothing to do with the parents' sin. And the truth is, we live in a fallen world, right? Which started the moment when Adam in the Garden of Eden disobeyed God, and sin entered the world and death entered the world. We see that in Romans 5:12. And all of the problems in this world are the result of sin and the fall. But what God is able to do, though, God is able to take our brokenness and our mess, and he's able to redeem it. He is able to redeem it back to life, or in this case, sight. And Jesus is going to display his glory for all to see by healing this man. Look at verse 6. It says, "Then he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva and spread the mud over the blind man's eyes. And he told him, 'Go wash yourself in the pool of Siloam.' Siloam means sent. So the man went and washed and came back seeing." So Jesus bends over and he makes these like little mud balls and he places them in the eyes of the blind man and tells him to go wash in the pool of Siloam, wash off the clay from his eyes. And the man obeyed Jesus, and think about it, for the very first time ever, this man experienced sight. Think about it. Colors and shapes would have just exploded in this man's eyes for the very first time. Right? He sees the faces of people for the very first time. Remember that flower he's never seen? He sees it. All the physical beauty of creation, of life, he now sees it, he now experiences it. But how? Why? Understand, it was only through the power of Jesus. Okay, it was not in the combination of clay and saliva. It was not in the combination of the chemicals found in the pool of Siloam. It was not even in the man's obedience. All right, this man could do nothing to make himself see. It's only in the power of Jesus. And we need to understand that the power of Jesus, well, it causes problems for people because they don't understand it. Look at verse 8. It says, "His neighbors and others who knew him as a blind beggar asked each other, 'Isn't this the man who used to sit and beg?' And some said he was, and others said, 'No, he just looks like him.' But the beggar kept saying, 'Yes, I am the same one.' They asked him, 'Well, who healed you? What happened?' He told them, 'The man they called Jesus made mud and spread it over my eyes and told me, "Go to the pool of Siloam and wash yourself." So I went and washed, and now I see." "Well, where is he now?" they asked. "I don't know," he replied. You see, his neighbors didn't know what to make of this miracle. Is this really the man who begged? Some said, yeah, it is. And others said, no, it's not. He just looks like him. But the man says, look, it is me. It is me. You see, truly this man's life is changed forever. Everything changed for him. Right? And he wants to think about it. He wants to celebrate this, right? He wants to scream it from the top of his lungs. He wants a party. And the crowd, what do they want? They want an explanation. What? How? We don't understand. This doesn't make any sense. And so they bring in the community leaders of the religious establishment known as the Pharisees to figure out what is going on and what just happened. Look at verse 13. It says, then they took the man who had been born blind to the Pharisees, because it was on the Sabbath that Jesus had made mud and healed him. The Pharisees asked the man about it, so he told them, he put mud over my eyes, and when I washed it away, I could see. Some of the Pharisees says, this man Jesus is not from God, for he is working on the Sabbath. Others said, but how could an ordinary sinner do such miraculous signs? So there was a deep division of opinion among them. Then the Pharisees again questioned the man who had been blind and demanded, what's your opinion about this man who healed you? The man replied, I think he must be a prophet. So right from the start, the Pharisees have determined that Jesus is guilty. They don't like Jesus. They never really did. And their man-made rules regarding the Sabbath, which is the day of rest, it was more important. It was more significant than the miracle of healing the man born blind. The Pharisees couldn't, and they wouldn't face the fact that Jesus had healed this man or that this man himself had been healed. So the Pharisees asked him what he thought. And you could just imagine what is going through this man's mind. Look, I don't know. I don't know what happened. All I know is that this dude, Jesus, he put mud in my eyes, and he told me to go wash, and I did, and now I see. And the Pharisees, they weren't satisfied with that answer. And so they decide to bring in his parents. Look at verse 18. It says, the Jewish leaders still refused to believe the man had been blind and could now see. So they called in his parents and asked them, is this your son? Was he born blind? And if so, how can he now see? His disciples replied, we know that this is our son. His parents replied, this is our son. And we know that he was blind. But we don't know how he can see or who healed him. Ask him for yourself. He's old enough to speak for himself. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders who had announced that anyone saying Jesus was the Messiah would be expelled from the synagogue. That's why they said, he is old enough, ask him. So we need to understand something here, that the Pharisees held a lot of power in the community. The synagogue was a place of worship. It was a place of social gatherings. The synagogue, it brought the community together. So the Pharisees had threatened anyone who confesses Jesus as the Messiah, they would be expelled, they would be excommunicated, they would be cut off, kicked out of the synagogue, which you need to understand, this was a huge deal. This is very serious. So the Pharisees had a new goal, which was not about finding out the truth. It was about disproving the miracle. Think about it. If the man's not blind, if he never was blind, then there's no miracle. So the Pharisees bring in the parents and ask them two questions. Is this your son? How can he now see? And if the parents refused to answer the question, they would be in trouble. Or if they answered the question in a way that the Pharisees didn't like, they would be in trouble. So they answered the first question truthfully. Yes, this is our son. And then to the second question, based on off of fear, they kind of sidestepped it a little bit and said, why don't you ask our son? He's old enough. And I want you to understand, church family, that public faith in Jesus, it does have serious consequences. You see, the Pharisees, they could not acknowledge, they wouldn't acknowledge that Jesus was God. And so they tried to disprove the miracle, which they couldn't do. And yet, one more time, we're going to see them try to change their approach on this, and now they're going to call into question the character now of Jesus. So the character of Jesus. Look at verse 24 now. So for the second time, they called in the man who had been born blind and told him, God should get the glory for this, because we know that this man, Jesus, is a sinner. I don't know whether he is a sinner, the man replied, but I do know this. I was blind, and now I see. But what did he do, they asked. How did he heal you? Look, the man explained, I told you once, didn't you listen? Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too? And then they cursed him and said, you are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke to Moses, but we don't even know where this man comes from. Why, that's very strange, the man replied. He healed my eyes, yet you don't know where he comes from. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners, but he is ready to hear those who worship him and do his will. Ever since the world began, no one has been able to open the eyes of someone born blind. If this man were not from God, he couldn't have done this. You were born a total sinner, they answered. Are you trying to teach us? And then they threw him out of the synagogue. So anxious to settle this case, they call this man back in for a second time. And if you're counting, this is now the fourth time that he's been asked, how are you healed? And so the man responds and says, look, I cannot debate the character of Jesus. Right? I didn't really know him until he put mud on my eyes and told me to go wash. The one thing he did know for a fact is that he was blind, and now he sees. And I could truly imagine, and you can see it in the text, this man is getting frustrated, and he's getting impatient with these Pharisees. Right? He's been blind his whole life. There is so much to see and so much to experience. And all he sees so far is the angry faces of the Pharisees. And he's answering the same question over and over again. And so he answers again. And this man with sight answers honestly. And he's starting to use sound logic here. Look at what he has done. You say sinners couldn't have done this. You say that God would never listen to a sinner. You're right when only someone from God could have done this. Therefore, Jesus is from God. Amen. Right? The evidence speaks for itself. This is a clear logical deduction. Yet in spite of the overwhelming evidence, the Pharisees, they continue to ignore. And they continue to disbelieve. And then they kick the man out of the synagogue. They expel him. They cut him off religiously. They cut him off socially for stating the obvious that Jesus must have come from God. Think about it, church. Like, this man is born blind. And he's a beggar. And he's ignored. He's barely seen. He's not really part of the community. He has no hope, no future for his life. Then he meets Jesus. He receives sight. He receives new life in every physical way possible. He can finally be an active participant in and a part of the community. He can get a job. He can learn a trade. He can have a family. And now not even a full day has passed. And he's kicked out of the community. Cut off from friends and family. And he's looked on and viewed by the Jews as a sinner, which is worse than being viewed blind. This man has to be thinking, what? What just happened? How? What? I don't understand.
Why would Jesus restore him and then strip it all away? Why did he give only to have it taken away? What was meant to be a joyous day, it turned out to be an unbelievable nightmare in a regard. Great joy to great sorrow. And despite having sight and new life, he's got questions and doubts, and his answers have not been there. And truthfully, here's the biggest point. He still has the greatest need of his life unmet. Look at verse 35. When Jesus heard what had happened, he found the man and asked, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man answered, "Who is he, sir? I want to believe in him." "You have seen him," Jesus said, "and he is speaking to you." "Yes, Lord, I believe," the man said, and he worshiped Jesus. Then Jesus told him, "I entered this world to render judgment, to give sight to the blind, and to show those who think they see that they are blind." Some Pharisees who were standing nearby heard him and asked, "Are you saying we're blind?" "If you were blind, you wouldn't be guilty," Jesus replied, "but you remain guilty because you claim to see." What was meant to be a joyous day, a day that this man dreamed of, this man had to face an unbelieving firing squad, and he had to wrestle with and he had to battle with religious leaders to find out what happened to him. But in this day of testing, in this day of wrestling, he discovered the greatest need of his life, which wasn't sight, but something else. I want us for a second, I want you to consider the faith journey of this man. When he first encountered Jesus in verse 11, and the crowd asked him who did this, his knowledge of Jesus that whole time was this, that Jesus was a man called Jesus, that he was just a man. And if that's where it ended, then that's all that this man would have known of Jesus, that he was a man called Jesus who did this for him. But then this man is interrogated, right? He's interrogated by the Pharisees, and they ask him, "Who did this?" And this man replies after some time of contemplation, after some time of thought, and goes, "Wait a minute. Jesus, he can't be a man. You know what? He must be a prophet. He must be a prophet," verse 17. Taking some time to look at the evidence and reflecting upon what had happened to this man, Jesus moved from being a man to a prophet. And now the second time that he's interrogated, when things are getting heated between him and the Pharisees, this man publicly thinks some more, right? And he examines and he thinks and has some thoughts. And he realizes and he publicly states that Jesus, he can't just be a prophet. He's not a man. He's not a prophet. A prophet couldn't do this. But you know who could do this? A man of God. A man of God could do this. A man of God could have given him sight. And in verse 33, that's what this man publicly states. Jesus is a man of God. And then we see in verse 38, after he's kicked out, and he encounters Jesus, and Jesus says, "Do you believe I am a son of man? Do you believe that I am the Son of God?" And this blind man says, "Yes." And he immediately worships Jesus. Don't you see, church family, without any prompting whatsoever, Jesus reaches down into this blind man's life and gives him physical sight. And now Jesus reaches down yet one more time into this man's life to give him something greater than sight, give him something more lasting than sight, something more critical and something more important than sight. He gives him spiritual sight, spiritual life. He gives him eternal salvation. And Jesus asks him, "Have you placed your faith in the Son of God who became man?" And this man says, "Yeah, I do. Look, I've had to think about this all day long, and I've had to relive this encounter with Jesus over and over, and I've come to the conclusion that, yes, Jesus is God. You see, earlier in the day, this man, he couldn't see anything, right? And now he sees the Messiah, and his eyes have beheld the Savior of the world. What a day for this man. But he didn't get all of his answers, did he? He still has questions and doubt. There's a lot that this man doesn't understand about what happened. And there's a lot that you and I are not going to understand. We are all going to have questions and doubts like this man. But this man also knew that there were some things that were undeniable. This man knew that he met Jesus and Jesus changed his life. That was undeniable. He was blind. That was undeniable. He now sees. That's undeniable. And I have to ask myself that same question. What are some things that are undeniable, even though I still have questions and I still have doubts? When I look at creation, creation to me screams the glory of God. It sings to me that there is a creator. When I consider how this earth like hangs and rotates in just the right spot to give us light and heat, but not too much heat to burn us up, and cool, but not too much cold to freeze us, man, it is undeniable that there is a creator. And the way the sun sets and sun rises, undeniable to me that there's a creator. It's undeniable to me that there is a Jewish carpenter who lived and taught and that lives were forever changed. It's undeniable to me that he died on a Roman cross. It's undeniable that he rose again, that the tomb was empty. The tomb was empty. It's undeniable that over 500 people saw Jesus after his death on that cross. It is undeniable that those closest to him were willing to die for him. Right? Tradition has Peter dying upside down on a cross. Andrew was crucified in Asia Minor. Thomas was speared to death. Philip was arrested and put to death. Matthew was stabbed to death. James was stoned and clubbed to death. Simon was put to death. And our writer John was exiled to the island of Patmos and died there. Why would these men die? Why would these followers of Jesus die if Jesus was just a liar? They wouldn't. You don't die for a lie. Why would these followers of Jesus die if they thought Jesus was crazy and this was all some kind of make-believe lunatic fantasy kind of thing? They wouldn't. But what they would die... they would die if what they believed was undeniable to them, that Jesus is who Jesus says he was. The evidence, though we may not understand it all, it points to the fact that Jesus is Lord. And we celebrate this day specifically, because this is the day where Jesus defeated and Jesus crushed death. That death had thought it had won, and Jesus' lifeless body was taken off the cross. And it was put in a grave, and the tomb then was sealed. And it was game over. Death had thought it had won. Or so it thought. Morning came when everything shook, and everything broke. And Jesus came out of that tomb. He came out of that tomb defeating death. And now for us, you understand what that means for us? For us, sin and the consequence of death, it's not our future. It's not our future. If we, like this man born blind, if we believe in Jesus, if we have faith in Jesus, then our future is secure. It's secure in Jesus, not in death. And if you have never said yes to Jesus because you have questions and you have doubts, I want to encourage you, then look at what is undeniable in front of you. Jesus loves you, and he died for you, and he rose again, and he defeated death. And it says that Jesus right now is preparing a place for those of us who are in his family. And if you say yes to Jesus, then you can have real and eternal life now and forever. So what do you say? What do you say? A great theologian, A.W. Tozer, said this in his book, The Knowledge of the Holy. He says this, that what comes to our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. In other words, what you think about God is what matters most in your life because it's going to dictate your eternal future. That's why it's so important that what you think about God. So who do you say Jesus is? Is he a liar? Is he a lunatic? Or is he Lord? Now I need you to understand that what you specifically think about Jesus, it actually doesn't change who Jesus is, right? But the point is this, you have to decide for yourself what you believe. You have to decide that. And I hope you see today in John chapter 9 that Jesus, he changes people. That he is the great restorer and he is the great redeemer. Not only does Jesus bring new life here on earth, but he brings about new life forever, eternally. This man in John chapter 9, you're going to see him in heaven. And you may still have questions and doubts. You may not have all of your questions answered, but I want you to know that you can still have hope, you can have redemption, and you can have new life just like this man in John chapter 9. It's available to you in and only through Jesus. Why? Because he's the one who defeated the grave. He's the one who defeated death. And then on that third day, rose. One more time, church family. He is risen.